You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast. We are now 1 week into the new year. It's January 7th, 2019. I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. If you enjoy the show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify and leave the show a good review in iTunes. Plenty to discuss today as we have completed the first weekend of the NFL playoffs. We're now down to eight teams, but we're going to start with what's been happening with the Jets coaching search. A few updates, a few thoughts on that. The big news over the weekend, there were a couple nuggets of information, but I think the big news over the weekend is the fact that Jets had their interview with Mike McCarthy. It seems like McCarthy has been kind of ambivalent about a lot of the jobs out there. He was kind of turned down the Cardinals. There have been another interview or two that's been rescheduled, which, you know, kind of left me wondering whether McCarthy really wants to coach in the NFL next year or whether maybe he wants to take a year off and assess his options next year. But McCarthy did have his interview with the Jets over the weekend, and from the sounds of things, it seems as though things went pretty well. You know, there's a lot of buzz about how McCarthy likes the Jets because of Sam Darnold. It's not that dissimilar of a situation with another young quarterback he had in Green Bay when he had Aaron Rodgers. We can debate how much McCarthy had to do with developing Rodgers, how good Rodgers was, but I think for a guy like McCarthy, he may view Darnold as having the chance to groom Darnold might be similar to a situation like he had in Green Bay with Rodgers. Obviously, Green Bay, they had Brett Favre, so it's not a direct one-to-one, but, a young quarterback he likes, can he do it again? And from the Jets' standpoint, sounds like the Jets really like him. There was a report that the CEO, Chris Johnson, was pretty enamored with McCarthy, so you wonder how much the Rodgers effect has on the Jets. Do the Jets view it as this guy helped develop Aaron Rodgers? Now can he do the same with Sam Darnold? And, if Chris Johnson's enamored with somebody, I'm about to say something sarcastic, so let's move on. McCarthy's a guy who I've been kind of split on because the end of his Green Bay tenure was not good. And, what really struck me is just how he stuck with assistant coach. His coaching staff hires were not very strong. Or maybe not necessarily his coaching staff hires, but he stuck with coaches who kind of became stale. And his offensive system became outdated. And, that became kind of one of the running themes of the NFL this year when you heard people talk about Green Bay this year. They talked about how his scheme became outdated. And essentially, he doesn't use formations to get guys open. He doesn't stack his receivers enough. Essentially, everything is in the passing game. The McCarthy offense requires guys to get open one-on-one. They don't do a lot with motions or formations to just get guys free releases, get them open, make it an easy game of pitch and catch like you see across the league in a number of these college-style offenses. So, and this is one of those things that, caught on this year. You heard it a lot, but it's not like this suddenly became a thing when the Packers started struggling. I remember hearing that, 3 years ago that, McCarthy was allowing his offense to become outdated. And these are things that help on the margins. You want to give your players easy plays to execute. You want to maybe just turn it. You want certain plays to not require your quarterback to do a lot of thinking after the snap. You want plays where the quarterback does not have to scan the entire field and throw, identify the open receiver and put the ball on the money. Now, any good quarterback's going to have to do that a bunch in the NFL, but you want to give him a break here or there. You want to give him a play off here or there where all he has to do is take the snap, throw the ball really quickly because somebody's been schemed open. McCarthy hasn't done a good job of that. Now, with that said, his track record is pretty solid. You look at his record in the league. You look at the fact that he won a Super Bowl with a million guys on IR. Earlier in his career, he did a good job. So, I could go either way on McCarthy. I've said that on many occasions. I think that there are some positive things with him. I think there are some negative things with him. For him, for me, it comes down to what's he going to do with his coaching staff? Is he going to be willing to leave his comfort zone a little bit and leave his Green Bay crew behind? Or is he going to stick with the same guys? To me, McCarthy's a much more attractive candidate if he's willing to modernize his offense. He's willing to leave his comfort zone a little bit. I'm expecting him to bring some people he's familiar with, some people he's worked with in the past. I'm not saying he has to totally overhaul his entire coaching staff, but I think there needs to be some changes. His offensive coordinator hire, I think, is important because I do think his scheme could stand to be improved. I think he's been passed in terms of building his scheme in the league. I think he's been lapped a little bit because his scheme is just not that innovative. His scheme, honestly, is in some ways almost Jeremy Bates-esque. So he's got to do the difference is that Aaron Rodgers has an easier time executing an offense than a rookie did. So McCarthy's got to modernize things. We'll see what happens on that front. The one thing I'd say is that even if the Jets are really enamored with McCarthy, and the signs are there's a lot of interest on both sides, I still don't think the Jets should upend their interview process, cut everything short now. I still think the Jets should speak with every candidate they want to speak to. I think in a situation like this, there might be a tendency to avoid speaking, to say, well, this is our guy, we're just going to cancel every other interview and hire him right now. I think that would be a mistake. Of course, obviously, it requires two to tango. McCarthy would also have to be willing to sign on the dotted line as well and not speak with Cleveland about their opening. But I want to see the Jets cast a wide search. I want to see them speak with every candidate. I think McCarthy has a good resume. I don't think it's good enough, though, that you totally upend the search and just say, this is our guy, we're hiring him now without speaking with the other candidate. So I'd like to see the Jets continue their interview process. And, if McCarthy is the guy, I just hope he's making the good hires on the offensive side of the ball. I hope he's not bringing just the Green Bay crew on the offensive side of the ball. And, if he wants he wants a piece of advice, if he wants somebody he's comfortable with, somebody he knows, I have a name that he could look at for his coaching staff. It's a guy who was one of his backup quarterbacks in Green Bay, who is now running a pretty prolific offense in college. And that guy by the name of Graham Harrell, who's the offensive coordinator at North Texas, has a good background. That would be a guy if you don't want to leave your comfort zone entirely, if you want somebody who's versed in modern ideas of offense, that would be a guy I'd look at for an assistant coach in the event the Jets hire McCarthy. A new candidate has potentially emerged on the radar for the Jets, and that's Matt Rhule, who is the coach of Baylor. He previously had coached at Temple. He has a little bit of NFL experience. He worked on the Giants coaching staff briefly a few years ago. An interesting candidate, a guy who had success at Temple. Temple's not that easy of a place to win. Temple traditionally has not been that great of a program. He had a couple 10-win seasons at Temple and came to Baylor. They only won one game his first year, but Baylor was a program in disarray when he arrived. They were coming off a major scandal, and he improved their win total by 6 this year. This is a guy who's generated plenty of buzz in NFL circles. Whenever I hear a guy get this much hype, part of me wonders whether the guy's agents were behind it, because a lot of these aspects of the coaching search are based on media buzz. So I always can't help but wonder if maybe the media is playing a role in this. Maybe the guy's agent is just doing a good job pushing him. But I mean, there's just so much positive talk around him. And you look at the record. The record is pretty. And now his overall record is 36-40. But overall, if you look in the context of what he's done, it's pretty impressive. Now there's no interview. There's nobody reported that the Jets have scheduled an interview with him. So there's a question of whether he'd be interested. I mean, he's getting so much buzz that I actually became surprised that he was not even on the Jets' radar. So I was surprised, that there had not been any mention of him prior to this weekend. So, I'm glad to hear that the Jets are taking a look at this guy, because I think he's done a good job at the places he's been at. I think he'd be a pretty solid candidate. Now, in other news, the Jets may have to cross a candidate off their list, and that's Cliff Kingsbury, because of an odd rule. Kingsbury is currently employed by USC as their offensive coordinator, and he is apparently in demand for interviews with NFL teams to be their head coach. I mean, there are not many instances where a college coordinator becomes in demand by NFL teams for head coaching openings, but the Jets and the Arizona Cardinals are looking to interview with him. However, it sounds like USC is denying Kingsbury permission to go on those interviews. And apparently the NFL is going to back USC. There are reports out there that because Kingsbury is under contract with USC, the NFL will require its teams to get USC's permission, and the NFL will discipline teams if they do not get permission from people employed in college for interview, which is odd. I don't understand why the NFL would care about that. I don't understand. I mean, the NCAA is not under the NFL's jurisdiction, so I find it odd that the NFL is requiring teams to seek permission from colleges. But apparently that's what's happening. Now there are rumors maybe Kingsbury will resign so he can interview with these teams. So, you know, stay tuned on that front. Just a kind of an odd situation. I mean, I wonder why Kingsbury even took that USC job so quickly. It seemed like, I mean, this was a guy who, you know, had to know that as an offensive. Now, I'm not sure he realized he was going to get head coaching interviews, but I think, if he wanted to work in the NFL, he probably should have realized that there would be other opportunities available to him. So I don't know why he was in such a rush to take that USC job. Anyway, so Kingsbury now may be off the table. And, you know, I'm of a couple minds on this. I mean, my first thought is obviously, what a weird rule. You know, I'm kind of puzzled by that. I'm kind of puzzled by that whole situation. But my second thought is, I don't really have interest in this guy as a head coach in Canada. He did not do a good job at Texas Tech. You know, his teams were, you hear constantly, if you read about what they were like, read constantly about undisciplined, about how he made shaky coaching staff hires. And this is a Texas Tech, you know. If a guy can't beat Kansas State, how do you feel about his odds of beating New England? And now Kingsbury's an excellent offensive mind. I think he'd be an excellent hire as an assistant coach. But this whole idea, you know, I feel like Kingsbury, when teams are looking at him, it's like they're trying to chase the next McVay instead of just finding the right coach. They're just trying to kind of get, essentially what they're doing is they're finding a lesser version of Sean McVay because they're trying to just chase what the Rams did. And this whole thing, you know, the whole idea of hiring a guy like this just strikes me as putting the cart before the horse, and it never works. You convince yourself that some offensive scheme is going to be the star of your team rather than your players. So you do everything you can to get this scheme, and then you overthink this, and you think, well, if I hire this guy as a coordinator, and he does well, then he's going to leave, and then I'm going to be without the scheme, so I have to hire him as a head coach. It doesn't work. It just never works out that way. I mean, the most recent example of a team that did that was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when they fired Lovie Smith because they were worried about losing Dirk Cutter, who was their offensive coordinator. And what happened? Cutter stunk as a head coach and got fired. The team had no success. So it's great to have a good offensive coordinator, but an offensive coordinator is never the most important guy in your organization. And if he is, you have a garbage organization. And if your franchise quarterback can only succeed with one offensive coordinator, he's not a franchise quarterback. And I don't believe for a second that Sam Darnold can only succeed with one offensive coordinator. I certainly don't believe that that's Cliff Kingsbury. And I think Kingsbury would be a nice match for the Jets. But I think this whole thing, like you said, it's just putting the cart before the horse. You're more worried about an offensive scheme than having a head coach who's capable of leading your team, you know, who has the leadership and organizational skills to build a winner. You know, good teams lose quality assistant coaches. You know what good teams do when that happens? They replace quality assistant coaches because they have a head coach who knows how to find coaching talent. So, you know, I'm not really that upset about losing out on Kingsbury if the Jets cannot interview him. One of the things that's interesting about this coaching search is that you have three candidates from the college ranks, if you count Monken, who had losing records as college coaches. Now, I think two of them, if you look at the records in context, Monken and Rule, they're pretty good if you look at what they did in context, because there were lots of they inherited programs that were in disarray, and they had some bad seasons year one before turning things around. If you look at Kingsbury, it's been pretty consistent mediocrity, and the guy was one of the worst coaches in the in his program's history. You know, he was the only coach since Texas Tech. The way you have to view it is you can't look at the record in totality. You have to look at it in context. And you look at what Kingsbury did in context. First of all, a lot of losing seasons. Second of all, guy, you know, team was mediocre when they had Pat Mahomes at quarterback. You know, what's that say? And also, you look at the context of what Kingsbury did versus what his predecessors did. You can't compare what Kingsbury is doing to Texas or Oklahoma because those schools have more resources. So what have guys who had similar resources done to Kingsbury? What have past coaches at Texas Tech done with the same resources Kingsbury had? Well, almost all of them have done more. So I don't understand this guy's candidacy. I understand this candidacy. I just think I think the rationale behind it is quite poor. The first weekend of the NFL playoffs is in the books. We are now down to 8 teams after the 4 games, 2 on Saturday, 2 on Sunday. And late on Sunday afternoon, it was looking good for me. It looked like the dream was going to make it through the first weekend, the dream of picking every playoff game correctly. But then the Bears lost. And I'm surprised. I have to be honest with you. The Eagles did it to me again. One of these times I'm actually going to pick them in a playoff game. Probably won't be against the Saints, though. I mean, I know this team keeps burning me, but and maybe I should have learned my lesson, but I'm probably going to go with the Saints next week. And that said, just an incredible job by the Eagles, a team that everybody had pretty much written off a month ago, and they just keep finding ways. What an impressive crew with their backup quarterback. And I think when we talk about quarterbacks, the story of the weekend really for me was the quarterbacks. The story of these games told about the career arcs of these quarterbacks. In Houston, you had Andrew Luck playing a good game as the Colts go on the road and beat the Texans. And to me, that's a story of a quarterback who people are finally going to figure out how good he is. Andrew Luck is the great quarterback in the NFL. A lot of people don't realize is a great quarterback because he's been saddled with some really lousy teams. They've not put the proper talent around him for most of his career. You know, when you watch film, it strikes you that there are two parts of every play. There's every passing play. There's the quarterback part, the stuff the quarterback does. And then there's the stuff everybody else does. So the quarterback part is identifying an open receiver, throwing an accurate pass, making the right read. The other people's stuff are, you know, blocking properly, receiver running a good route to get open. And sometimes the quarterback stuff can override the other parts. You know, if a receiver doesn't get open, you can throw back shoulder, you can fit the ball into a tight window. If the offensive line breaks down, quarterback can move, evade pressure. One of the things about the Colts is the quarterback stuff, since Andrew Luck arrived, has been executed at an exceptionally high level. But I think a lot of people have missed it, because if you don't watch the Colts on a regular basis, you maybe only look at the numbers, which are not bad. You look at the team's results, and you know you don't come away that impressed, because the other pieces around Luck were so bad that the team was not that successful. Now, a few years early in his career, Luck was so good that he carried that team on his back to successful seasons, but things have kind of stagnated over the last few years. Luck was banged up. Well, they finally put a good team around him. They finally put what appears to be at least a good coaching staff around him, and you're starting to see the results. Then you go to Dallas, and Dak Prescott making some plays. And Dak Prescott is a great example to me of how we get too obsessed with the last thing we saw when we evaluate a young quarterback. Quarterback careers are marathons, not sprints. And, you know, you can't go overboard with just the latest thing you've seen. You know, Prescott's rookie year, Dallas ended up getting the top record in the NFC. And he was proclaimed the next great quarterback. Well, he was one piece on an excellent team. And he was effective, but he probably got a little too much credit. Then the years that followed, Cowboys weren't as successful. Things stagnated a bit. So then people said, well, Dak's not that good. Well, you know, part of the issue were the pieces around him, just as part of the reason he was successful as a rookie were the pieces around him. Now, it looks like things are on their way back up. What the final story of Dak Prescott will be. Will he grow to a franchise quarterback? Will he not? I don't know. But I think just as you probably should not have gone too crazy that rookie year, just as you should not have gone too crazy when he struggled after that rookie year, you shouldn't go too crazy because now he's won a playoff game. You should just let this story play out, and we'll see what happens with him. Some quarterbacks are able to make the leap. You know, I think most quarterbacks in this league, there aren't that many who step in and are great right away. The young quarterbacks in this league tend to be effective, and then I always think it's like around year six, year seven, where they really start to take off and become great. Will Prescott be one of those guys? I'm not sure, but you know, moments like you saw on Saturday where he's making big plays in big games, make you one, you know, they give you hope at least. We'll see what happens from this point. But he, you know, to me, that's the story from Dallas. The story from Baltimore where the Chargers go on the road and beat the Ravens. Well, it wasn't so much Phillip Rivers playing great, but Rivers is the story for me with the Chargers. He's a guy like Luck who I think people probably don't realize how good he is because, well, first of all, because he played most of his career in San Diego, kind of an obscurity, but also because the team hasn't had as much success as it should have had. Rivers have been on some great teams that have kind of floundered in big spots. He's also played on some teams. He's played on multiple teams that were really good on the offensive and defensive sides of the ball that missed the playoffs because they're special team multiple times in his career. He said teams that were good on in two of the phases, but the special teams were so bad that they cost the Chargers playoff spots. So for me, Rivers is kind of a sentimental favorite. I think people don't realize that this guy is a potential Hall of Famer. That this guy, you know, this guy has his resume is Hall of Fame worthy. If you look at what he's done versus what some Hall of Famers have done, I think a Super Bowl this year would cement it and maybe make people realize how good Rivers is. So the Chargers get one step closer toward fulfilling that dream. And then in Chicago, how Nick Foles does this stuff, I don't know. Number one defense on the road in a playoff game. I mean, I'm running out of excuses to how to downplay Nick Foles. You know, against Atlanta last year, he didn't play that well. Then against Minnesota, okay, well, he was at home. Then the Super Bowl, okay, well, they had a couple weeks to prepare. I mean, going on the road and leading a comeback against the number one defense, it's tough to explain this because we know Foles is still not that great of a quarterback. I mean, you looked at what he did in the first half of that game, threw a couple interceptions, looked very shaky, but then puts together the drive his team needs in the big spot. And, you know, it's not like Foles is a franchise quarterback. You know, you see him play, you know, when he goes out there, some of his performances are very spotty. It's not like he's doing this on a week-to-week basis. But there's just something about that mix in Philadelphia. There's something about that player and that team that just allows them to rise to the occasion in big spots. And, you know, for the first time, maybe there's some thought, do the Eagles just keep riding with Foles? And I think a lot of that comes down to, you know, do you possibly trade Carson Wentz for a big return? I think the answer to that comes down to how good do you think Carson Wentz is? Do you think Carson Wentz is an elite franchise quarterback? Because if you do, then he's better than Foles and you should stick with him. But if he's like one of those middle of the pack guys, then you might want to think about it, because what's become clear over the last few years in the NFL is you just cannot pay a mediocre quarterback top dollar. You can't pay a middle of the pack quarterback like he's a franchise guy. Middle of the pack quarterback needs a stable infrastructure. You know, he needs the pieces around him. And when you give that guy that cap clogging contract, you can't put the requisite pieces around him. So is Wentz a difference maker? You know, the guys at the top of the list, your Rodgerses, your Bradys, your Roethlisbergers. With those guys, it's okay to give them that money because they can make up for a lack of talent in other places. They're that good. The guys like your Ryan Tannehills, your now Eli Mannings, those guys can't. And there was I can't remember where I read this. This was an article I read. I think it was last week or the week before. It was just like it was one of the. I'll have to find it because it made this exact point that, you know, you can't pay a middle of the pack quarterback top dollar. Kirk Cousins is another example, because then you can't afford the pieces around the quarterback that guy needs, because he's not enough of a difference maker to lift the team on his back. So that, I think that's what the question that the Eagles will have to ask themselves. You know, do you stick with the cheaper Foles because you can surround him with the type of pieces that help you, like you can win with Foles at quarterback, or do you think Wentz is that kind of difference maker? You know, a few other scattered thoughts about this weekend. You know, you look at the three of the four losing quarterbacks were young guys making their first playoff start. I don't know whether the pressure got to them, but, you know, some erratic performances by young quarterbacks, not all bad. Lamar Jackson kind of got hot in the fourth quarter for Baltimore. Trubisky, I think the least of the three I would criticize would be Trubisky, just because he made some big plays in the fourth quarter of that game and actually had the Bears in position to win. But he was erratic early in the game. I mean, he was lucky he did not have three interceptions in that game. So, you know, he a very up and down player, very up and down season for him. It ended on a high note. I can't get on him too much, because at the end of the day, when you have a field goal from that spot, when the quarterback drives you for a game-winning field goal attempt from there, which should have been made, you know, he did what he had to do to win that game. So, you know, I'll go a little easy on Trubisky, but obviously notable that three young quarterbacks making their first playoff starts all lost at home this weekend. So that's something I picked up on. You know, you look at the Bears, number one defense, backup quarterback. And again, this is also another thing to defend Trubisky, is number one defense at home against the backup quarterback can't allow a game-winning touchdown drive late in the fourth quarter. So, you know, Bears defense, heard a lot about them all year. Well, you know, you're not a great defense if you allow that to happen. And finally, just another thing I noticed with is Anthony Lynn, who was on the Jets staff for all those years. He worked under Rex Ryan. You know, he did get a head coaching interview with the Jets a few years back, but looks like he's done a pretty good job with the Chargers. You know, former Jets assistant, seems like he's turned into a pretty good head coach. Helped turn around a team that got off to an awful start last year, even though they missed the playoffs. And this year, now he's in the final eight with a team that could be dangerous. Guy looks like a really good head coach, and I wonder why, when this guy was under the Jets' nose this whole time, how does he end up being the head coach somewhere else? You know, and that's the answer to that. Probably tells you a lot about the situation the Jets are in. The most important thing you have to do is be able to self-evaluate. You have to know how talented the people are in your building. And you wonder how the Jets get into this position. I think that has something to do with it. Anyway, that's all for us today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy this show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, and please leave the show a good review in iTunes. Hope you have a great Monday. We'll be back again tomorrow to talk more Jets.